Welcome to season 5 of Swiss Impact with Benedy. I'm Sveta.
And I am Ben. The topic of season 5 is impactful investments. How can you make a difference with your capital?
Our guests, who are managing impact investment funds, business owners, thought leaders, will empower you to invest with impact.
In this season, we will showcase various impact investment funds who are contributing to SDGs, better known as Sustainable Development Goals, as defined by the United Nations.
There is no excuse. Shift your capital to create positive change in our world. Your children will be happier, you will feel fulfilled, and make money.
We will broadcast every Friday afternoon at 5 p.m. Central European Time, here on Swiss Impact with Banerjee. You get more when you give back.
So always invest with impact.
Good morning, afternoon, and evening to everyone. We would like to dedicate today's show to a very old friend of mine and someone I really deeply respect. That is the former Prime Minister of Japan, His Excellency Shinzo Abe, who was assassinated yesterday, but he stood for his country and he was a hero in the eyes of many around the world.
Yes, so with this, I'd like to welcome everyone who is watching us today, episode 5 of season 5, which is still dedicated to impactful investment opportunities. And today we are going to talk about on one of the favorite topics of Ben, climate change. And with our guests, we are going to provide you, our dear audience, the real news and action on climate change.
So today indeed is a very, very exciting day because we are able to get someone who is a global voice on this topic. I'm sure that like many of our audience, we would love to hear what is the status of our climate today. I mean, the climate of the whole world. What can the countries and its citizens do to adapt and mitigate this present disaster? And I would also like to learn a bit more about how to communicate with climate skeptics.
Right. And I can't wait to get the latest news on what can be done for climate change, if at all we still can do anything to mitigate it. If climate change is not your favorite topic, you can watch other programs related to sustainable development goals at many channels on smart TVs and social media like LinkedIn, Facebook, and YouTube, of course, by subscribing on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Swiss Impact, or also listen on podcasts such as Spotify. And of course, if you watch our programs, share it with your friends and family who are interested to learn about what can they do, something meaningful for our planet and people living on it. And maybe they want to invest also as well. But let's keep the tradition. And I'd like to ask Ben to share, hopefully, a positive story.
So today I will try to keep it short. On one side, we are hearing too many climate-related events happening all around the world. In Mumbai, the rain. In Australia, also the rain. In Italy, a severe drought. And it seems to be getting more and more frequent. On other side, we are hearing that even so-called Green Europe, governments are increasing burning of coal and gas, especially due to now the war of Russia, which many experts believe will go on for some time. And even if the war finishes today, this problem will not be solved. So there seems to be a clear delink. On one side, we know that we are dooming the future generation and even our generation for in the coming decades. But on the other hand, we still listen to the powerful fossil fuel lobbies, like recently the head of the US Petroleum Producers Group was asking for increasing oil production, thus advising government to invest more in extracting and burning fossil fuel, which for a very good reason, Mother Nature put it as deep under the ground as possible. And the new mantra of the Republicans seem to have become is energy independence, meaning turn up oil production, instead of using this golden opportunity to invest and build renewable energy centers quickly. It was funny. I was speaking last weekend with a German neighbor of mine who mentioned that stopping burning of coal or buying Russian oil will severely disrupt German economy and there is no money for investing in renewables. Well, I just reminded him that our economy recently lost 7% of its GDP due to the COVID pandemics, and I still haven't heard of utter chaos in the German society. So where are we standing now?
I actually would like to add some news to your story from the European Parliament, who on Wednesday this week, they approved gas and nuclear power plants as climate friendly, throwing out an attempt to block the law that has exposed deep rifts between countries over how to fight climate change. So basically, the new rules will add gas and nuclear power plants to the EU taxonomy rulebook from 2023, enabling investors to label and market investments in gas and nuclear as green. So what the Danish chief investment officer Anders Schelde said, he's a Danish pension fund chief investment officer, that this is a poor signal to the rest of the world that may undermine the EU's leadership position on climate action. Ben, what do you want to comment on that?
I completely agree to what Anders says from Danish Pension Fund. It will undermine, and that was exactly my point earlier, that there seems to be a serious delink between reality and the policies that at this moment the governments are making with a very, very short-term thought process.
Yeah, and with that, I'd like to welcome our guest of today, Professor Dr. Petri Talas, who is the Secretary General of the World Meteorological Organization, WMO. And I'd like to welcome him in our studio now.
Thank you. Thanks for the invitation. It's a pleasure to address you.
Welcome, Professor Talas. It's our honor and pleasure to have you with us today. Thanks for accepting the invitation. Before we start with the interview, I want to give a short introduction about you to our audience. So, Professor Dr. Petri Talas was appointed by WMO Congress as the Secretary General of the World Meteorological Organization, headquartered here in Geneva. You started in 2016 for a 4-year period, and then you got re-elected in 2019 by Congress to serve for a second term of another 4 years. Prior to this appointment, you were also Director General of the Finnish Meteorological Institute. During this period, you represented Finland as the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the famous IPCC organization. I think the world is knowing it, IPCC. So it's very famous, of course. And also, I'd like to say that you are true scientist, that you have a PhD in meteorology from the Department of Physics at the University of Helsinki. And you're also the author of around 50 peer-reviewed papers on satellite technology, global change, climate and atmospheric chemistry, as well as numerous other publications and presentations. Yeah, how did you do that in a lifetime? I don't know.
So, Professor Talas, can you please tell us a story on how you became the Secretary General of WMO?
For the first 16 years of my career, I was working as a scientist and I was interested in atmospheric science, and we were dealing with climate change and also atmospheric chemical composition related issues. And then I was attracted, and finally I became a professor, and then I was attracted to become Director General of the Finnish Meteorological Institute, which is a scientific and service institution, a fairly strong atmospheric science institution, and then I became a science bureaucrat in 2002, and then I was attracted to apply for the World Meteorological Organization Secretary General post, and in 2015 I was elected to my current post. And here we are dealing with weather, climate and water issues in the UN family, and we are also hosting IPCC, which is writing these scientific reports on status of climate, besides annual reports that we are publishing from WMO's side.
Okay.
If you see the news of extreme rainfall in Mumbai, in India, in Sydney, in Australia, extreme drought in Italy, etc., it seems that it's becoming more and more frequent also in other countries. Is it just our belief, or is it really happening?
I have been using analogy to sports. The athletes are high-performing individuals, and if you give them doping, they can even perform better. And we have been doping the atmosphere by injecting more carbon dioxide and methane to the atmosphere, mm-hmm. and that's why we have started seeing growing amount of extreme weather events, heat waves, flooding, drought, tropical storms, and sea level rise, melting of glaciers, and that's all because of especially our consumption of fossil energy, coal, oil, and natural gas. They're the main factors behind the fact that we have seen an increase, and we have also seen an increase in the economic losses during the past 50 years. They have been increasing fivefold, and so this impacts of climate change, they are becoming more and more expensive as well.
And what is the World Meteorological Organization, and what is its mission?
So we are the UN specialized agency on weather, climate and water. We are dealing with weather services, early warning services. We are dealing with the status of climate, and also we are the founding father and host agency of IPCC, which produces these big climate reports, and then we are also in charge of the global water resource management, monitoring of the water resources worldwide, and practically all of the UN members are also our members. We have, I don't know, 93 members, and we have our headquarters in Geneva, and then we have also regional offices in other parts of the world, altogether 10 offices.
Okay. And could you specify maybe in more detail which are WMO's focus areas?
So we have established a global network to monitor real-time behavior of the atmosphere, which is the backbone of weather forecasting, and it's also backbone of our understanding of the climate system. Then we are running 13 global producing centers, which are running forecasting models, and then we are also hosting World Climate Research Program, which is in charge of climate modeling. At the most recent IPCC report, we got the 63 centers which were making estimates of the future climate, and then we also have monitoring systems for the water resources, and then we are also publishing reports on status of climate, status of disasters, and what's happening to the water resources worldwide.
Mm-hmm. I want to warn our audience that today is going to be quite technical and deep dive into climate change issues. We are going to talk about the latest climate report of WMO, the early warning system, and the systematic observation financing facility. What is that we are going to discuss now? To start with, could you tell us what is the climate report of WMO to bring everyone on the same page? And could you tell us a few points from the latest one? I think this is very important. So what are the main points from the latest report?
So besides this big IPCC report, we provide also annual status of climate reports. And in our most recent report, which was published a few weeks ago, we described that climate change still continues. We have again broken records in the concentrations of main greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide, methane and nitrous oxide, and that's happening despite of this COVID lockdown. So this 1 year's anomaly in emissions didn't change the big picture. Then we have seen a boost in sea level rise. We have doubled the sea level rise during the past 20 years. It used to be about 2 millimeters per year, but recently we have seen more than 4 millimeters per year sea level rise numbers. We have stored record amount of heat to ocean. Actually, more than 90% of the heat that we have produced to the planet is stored in ocean. And we have also seen a record in ocean acidification, ocean serve as a sink of carbon dioxide. And by injecting more carbon dioxide to the seawater, we are changing the chemical composition. And we have a record acidity in the ocean, which is a long-term threat to the ecosystems. And also the melting of glaciers has been boosting, and that's bad news for the availability of freshwater resources in main rivers worldwide. And the melting of Greenland and Antarctic glaciers, they are having impact on sea level rise, and this is supposed to continue for the coming centuries anyhow, because we already have such a high concentration of carbon dioxide. And locally, we have seen several records. In Europe, we broke all-time high last year, 48.8 degrees. In Italy, in Canada, they had 49.6 degrees in Western Canada. And we also saw severe heat wave and forest fires, and also drought in some parts of the world, like in African countries. And then we saw severe flooding problems in China and India. And in all of those cases, we got also casualties, unfortunately.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, to me, it seems, I'm a layman, that the impact seems to be going all around the world at the same time. Like you mentioned, the glacier collapse. So recently there was a glacier break in Pakistan, which is in the Southern Hemisphere. And we also had a glacier break in Italy. All happened within the same week. It's nearly, it sounds like a coincidence, or is it really happening globally?
This, all of the mountain glaciers worldwide, they are melting, and also the biggest glaciers worldwide, Greenland and Antarctic glacier, they are melting, and they are having impact on freshwater resources, availability of freshwater for agriculture, human beings, industry, and these big glaciers, Greenland and Antarctica, they are the major drivers behind the sea level rise that we have seen also boosting.
Okay, and I wanted to ask you that since I was a kid, there was something I learned from childhood, is that we are consuming far more than Earth can rejuvenate, and also causing irreparable damage and harm to it. But somehow, in the last 40 years, this knowledge is not reaching the boardrooms of large industrial corporations, or so-called the polluters. So what, in your opinion, seems to be this communication barrier, or what is causing this communication barrier?
Actually, when I studied meteorology in the early 80s, climate change was a top secret thing of the med science community, and thereafter we started publishing IPCC reports in the 90s, and there were first attacks against science, and it's a question whether these meteorologists can really, is this something reasonable, or is it just some dreaming that we could describe what's going to happen in the future. But nowadays the impacts of climate change, they are seen everywhere in the world, and the governments have realized that we have a major problem called climate change. And that's recognized at the heads of state level. And the good news is that also the private sector has become a part of the solution. They were also suspicious whether this is a serious issue or not. But nowadays, growing amount of big companies are interested in being part of the solution. And we are lucky to have also growing amount of financial and technical means to be successful in climate mitigation. For example, the prices of solar and wind energy, they are nowadays lower than the prices of fossil energy, and also the prices of batteries and electric vehicles have been dropping. And we are lucky that already 32 countries have reduced their emissions quite a bit during the past 15 years, mostly European countries and developed countries like USA, Singapore and Japan, but also other countries. So there's a positive movement going on, but so far we are not heading towards the Paris the limits 1.5 to 2 degrees. So there's more work needed to be successful in climate mitigation.
And when you're talking about or thinking about solutions, are you also taking the remote communities in your decision-making process?
So we have, of course, these impacts are felt worldwide. That's what the IPCC reports recently were describing, that there's not a place on the planet which hasn't been affected by climate change, and also these communities which are living in remote areas, they are very much concerned in the Arctic, but on the island states and so forth. So this is a global problem, and we need all of the players on board to be successful in solving this problem.
To bring the clarity to everyone who is listening today to us, can you in few sentences say what is the current state of the world's climate, how good it is, how bad it is? So just a summary, where do we stand today?
So as I said, we have already seen a positive movement. There's more political will to solve this problem, and we have also growing amount of technological means, and these technological means are now cheaper than they used to be 20 years ago, and every year we get new innovations how to be more successful in climate mitigation, and many big companies have taken this challenge seriously. And that's positive development what I have seen happening at the Glasgow COP26 meeting, which took place last November. The richest countries, so-called G7 countries, and European Union made pledges that this would keep us on 1.5 degrees track. But unfortunately, the big emitters from Asia, for example, China, India, Russia, Brazil, and South Africa, they were not able to make such pledges yet. But we have started moving in the right direction. In the past, the worst scenario was 5 degrees warming by the end of this century. And today we are talking about 2.5 degrees warming, which is going to happen if we continue running the business as we have been doing so far. So we have been able to avoid the biggest disasters, but still this 2.5 degrees would be bad for the welfare of mankind, especially in less developed part of the world, and we would see growing amount of weather related disasters, and of course the sea level rise and melting of glaciers, as I already described.
Professor Tallis, you know, we are very action-oriented. This is a question. So what can be done to tackle the environmental issues?
So we have to reduce the consumption of fossil energy. That's number one. So we have to get rid of coal-fired energy. We have to stop using oil as fuel for transportation. And then we have to reduce the consumption of natural gas. And then we also have to stop deforestation, which has been taking place especially in Latin America, Africa, and southern parts of Asia. That has also negatively contributed to the problem. And as part of that challenge, we should also start favoring more vegetarian diet, because we use at the moment 70% of the farmland for feeding cattle, and that's not very smart way of using those resources. And at the same time, we are having hunger problem, and the population growth means that we have to be more economic in consumption of those resources. So, but the biggest problem is related to use of fossil energy, and second most important is this deforestation, especially in tropical areas.
Well, Professor Talos, are you vegetarian as well? I always ask everyone who is coming.
I'm eating very little meat, so that's I'm mostly eating vegetables and seafood, and the meat that we eat in our family, that's game, so it's not so that's mm-hmm. not part of the climate problem. It's something right. different.
I want to ask you a controversial question that there are many among us, like the former president of America, many Republicans, they believe that climate change is not man-made and is just a propaganda. I was also recently reading the news that many in Australia believe that the floods in Sydney are artificially created by cloud seeding and government-controlled weather manipulation. So what would you say to these people, and what are your thoughts or arguments on this?
So in our field we are either measuring the things, or we are calculating the things based on laws of physics. So for us, climate change is not a matter of belief; it's a matter of measurements, or it's a matter of calculation of the behavior of climate based on laws of physics. And this science is very. Very solid, and what we were able to predict in the 80s that has happened. So we have also been able to demonstrate that the model predictions that we made only several decades ago, they have been happening as we were able to estimate. So and the impacts of climate change, they are nowadays visible everywhere in the world. You shouldn't explain all of the climatic variations with the weather variations with climate change, but this trend of a growing amount of heat waves, growing amount of drought, growing amount of flooding, and more intense tropical storms in new areas like in southern parts of Africa, they are caused by climate change, and also this melting of glaciers and Arctic sea ice and snow. Those are clear indications of climate change. So science is very solid, and I would say that these climate skepticism is something which is more and more disappearing because the proof is so strong.
But what do you think about the propaganda? I mean, what would you say to people who still don't believe in climate change and think it's not man-made, or, you know, and then believe in some other theories?
Of course, we always have people who want to have some alternative theories. We have seen it related to vaccinations. We see it at the moment related to the war in Ukraine and so forth. That's part of the human nature. Sometimes people don't like bad news, so they find a way to fight against the bad news, and one way to fight against bad news is to question the facts, and this is also happening in the field of climate science. But I would say that what has happened during the past 20 years, it's amazing. So I think that we have very few of those who don't believe in those in the scientific facts, and among the heads of state and governments that doesn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for answering that question. Now I'd like to talk about the early warning system. So you said you calculate everything based on physics, mathematics. Could you tell us what is the EWC, so early warning system, and what are its main features?
Yeah, so besides the climate mitigation that we have been talking about so far, we have to pay attention to climate adaptation, because the negative trend in climate will continue for the coming decades anyhow, which means that we will see more and more weather extremes, drought, flooding, storms, and also strong weather variability. And to mitigate that problem, we have to create proper weather early warning services, and also better ways to monitor and control the water resource management. And that's why we have created an initiative which is supported by Secretary General Guterres. He has tasked WMO to prepare an action plan that all of the citizens of our planet would have access to early warning services. That means high impact weather events at the one week scale, seasonal predictions, which are important for farmers, for example, in tropical areas and low latitude areas, and also this El Niño La Niña variability, which is driving the global weather patterns, which we can forecast half year ahead. So we have prepared an action plan to improve the situation. At the moment, only half of our members have access to early warning services, and that means that when a high impact weather event hits them, there are more casualties, and also there are much more economic losses. So once these services are used, one could avoid both human casualties and economic losses, and enhance your agricultural productivity, use your energy systems in a wiser manner, and also there could be health related benefits by using those services. And we have to enhance the service capabilities, especially in less developed countries, especially in Africa, Caribbean, Pacific Islands, and some parts of Asia and Latin America.
But we are aware that some similar kind of systems exist in many countries, especially in Indonesia, India, and all that. So how does WMO's early warning system differentiate from the ones which already exist?
So we are a member organization. All of these services are carried out by individual members in individual member countries. But it's important that all of our members have the skills to run such services. And it's important that all of our members get access to products from the global producing centers, which are providing these early warning service calculations for the coming week, coming season, and even coming half year. And at the moment, only half of our members have such skills. And it's also important to be able to forecast the impact of the weather event, what kind of disturbances it's going to cause in safety matters, energy, agriculture, health, and so forth. And our developed country members have state-of-the-art know-how and state-of-the-art services in place, and WMO serves as a family organization where we are sharing that know-how with rest of our members, and we are freely exchanging data, but we are also freely exchanging know-how, and that's what needs to happen to improve the early warning services worldwide.
Because I was reading, we have the early warning system, for example, when the tsunami comes or something in Indonesia or India, there's a pre-warning. But on other hand, you must have heard about in India when the summer came, we were also in India when it suddenly, already in March, April, the weather reached 45 plus. The government had to recalculate its whole annual year's food production and had to reduce it with 20%. They said that because India was expecting a bumper crop, that there will be huge overproduction. And now they had to recalculate. And this happened within a period of a very short term with a very high temperature summer, that the government could already speculate or calculate that is going to impact the food production. So will you also be doing the same for all the countries of the world?
So this is one example of this kind of impact-based forecasts, impact-based services, and the developed countries and advanced countries with advanced services, they can do so, but half of our members can't do so, and this would be highly beneficial for the countries, but also for the humanitarian agencies. We have, for example, World Food Program, which is deciding how to assist the countries which are suffering from lack of food, and we can also give advice for such players so that they can target their resources more wisely and be prepared often several months ahead that there's going to be famine problem in some parts of the world, for example at the moment East African countries Somalia, Ethiopia, Eritrea, and Kenya are suffering because of drought, and we have been able to warn them, warn these humanitarian agencies ahead that it's coming, and by doing so we could mitigate the famine problem.
Professor Taros, just for clarity, you know, is this early warning system available for free for any country, or the countries must acquire it, so invest in that? So how does it work on practical level? And if so, like, if they need to invest, what would be the return on investment of such a warning system?
Yeah, so basically, we expect that the governments invest in their national services, but we are also are aware that in some less developed countries and island states, the resources are limited, and that's why we are seeking for external resources for such purposes. We have to invest in the basic observing systems, and we have to invest in manpower capacity development so that they can provide such services. And also distribution of the services, for example, mobile phone based systems and website based services, and there also private sector could play a role, and we are seeking for external financing for assisting our less developed country members to improve their basic infrastructures and their skills, and we are also collaborating with development agencies like World Bank, UNDP, Green Climate Fund, but we are also welcoming very much private sector investments in that sector. So this money is wisely invested. It has been demonstrated that if you invest $1 or €1 to meteorological services, you will get $20 or €20
back.
Is 20-fold.
Okay, That's extremely. And is this the same what your WMA is also speaking about, the systemic observation financing facility?
So that's part of this early warning service challenge that we are having ahead. We have major gaps in the basic observing systems in large parts of Africa, in Caribbean and Pacific island states, and some parts of Latin America. And that means that this forecast modeling that we are carrying out, the results are poor. So we say that if you put junk in your forecasting models, you get junk out. So the accuracy of the early warning services is poor if we don't have the basic data. And this is having a negative impact on the accuracy of early warning services worldwide. In a couple of days, the gaps in Caribbean, they're affecting Europe. The gaps in Africa, in one day, they are affecting Southern Asia, and also these Pacific gaps, they're having negative impact on the accuracy in USA. So there's also good reason for the developed world to invest in the basic observing systems. And that's why we have created this SOF, Systematic Observation Financing Facility, where we already have 7 donor countries who are supporting the work, and we have started concrete action actually this month.
And when you're speaking about investment from the private sector, so the private sectors will come and invest, but is WMO also putting the infrastructure in place which will see to it that these private investors get their return on investment? Or it is completely dependent on the country where they're investing?
So we are very much favoring public-private partnership at the national level. And there are many services where private sector could play a role. These basic safety-related services, they are the duty of governments, but for example, energy-related services, agriculture-related services, health-related services, they could also be provided by private companies, and also these mobile phone-based services can be provided by private companies. So we are very much interested in seeing a public-private partnership. And nowadays also these computer resources may come from private sector. We have actors like IBM, Microsoft, which are having these cloud services, and we would also like to collaborate more and more with such players. So I see this as a public-private partnership issue, and also these instruments that are needed. They are of course produced by private companies, and in some countries, private sector is also running these national networks, and that's also one interesting opportunity from that perspective.
Mm-hmm. And who was the stakeholder who contributed to the development of Systemic Observation Financing Facility, SOFF?
So that's an initiative of WMO, and we have two partners from United Nations on board. We have United Nations Environment Program, and we have also United Nations Development UNDP Development Agency on board, and we are collaborating with those players, and we have already seven donor countries which have begun financing that, and altogether we would need $1.5 billion for the whole early warning service package, including the water sector. But for the observing infrastructure, we would need $400 million for the coming 5 years, and then $50 million a year to maintain the networks for the coming 10 years.
Okay, and is SOFF currently looking for funding, partners, investors?
So we are very much interested in having further discussions with also private sector actors who could invest in this field, and my understanding is that there's growing interest in the private sector to invest in climate friendly solutions, and this is one great opportunity from my perspective.
Mm-hmm. And who would be your ideal partners? So who as partner would you prioritize? Is it governments or big corporations? So who do you see as a partner which would fit to your mission, and who could help you in this?
Actually both. We already have several governments who have been supporting this kind of work. But we are just exploring possibilities to get the private sector more and more on board.
Mm-hmm. And do you prefer developing countries or developed countries? Does it make any difference, or you are looking for both stakeholders in different segments?
So of course, the developed countries have more resources to invest in, but also the national governments have to play their role, and they are usually financing their national meteorological and hydrological services, but there's typically a need for additional financing from external sources from the developed countries, and okay, and also from the private sector.
And this SOFF, its first implementation started very recently. So do you know how long this will last, and what are the expected outcomes?
So we have prepared a 5-year program to improve the basic observing systems in Africa, in the so-called least developed countries in Africa, and also in so-called SIDS countries, which are small island developing states, and we have a bit more than 70 countries which are our target countries, and our aim is that in 5 years we would be able to improve the basic observing systems, that we would be compliant with international standards, and that would massively enhance the quality of the accuracy of early warning services in those areas, but also worldwide. Also the developed world would benefit from that investment. And thereafter, okay, our aim is to invest $50 million a year for the maintenance of the network to make sure that, mm-hmm, that there's sustainability as well.
And what is this climate risk and early warning system initiative, which you call the CRUSE?
That was also one of the programs that was originally initiated by government of France when the Paris Agreement was signed in 2015. And there we have been doing already capacity development of manpower skills at the less developed countries. We have been assisting 50 countries in improvement of their know-how and how to run these modern services, and that needs to be scaled up as part of the big major early warning service work, and we have to teach the less developed countries how to use the products from these global centers to create local services, and for example mobile phone based services for local farmers and various players in their countries.
Okay, and what is WMO's impact in numbers, like in countries, beneficiaries?
So it has been demonstrated that the money that we invest in our field, you get the money back at 20-fold. So we have by running our business, we can avoid the negative impacts of climate change, because we have started seeing growing amount of disasters, and we could mitigate those losses, and of course there would be also benefits. For example, once we invest more in renewable energy, solar, wind and hydro energy, you have to have related services to optimize the energy production and this the services that we are providing, that they can be used for such purposes. And also if one would use more the agricultural services, we could enhance the agricultural yield, and we have some examples from African countries where they have been able to enhance the yield 30-40% once they have started using our services, and then we have also health related services, air quality related services, and so forth, and of course this public safety services to mitigate damage and human losses. They are important.
Mm-hmm. And Professor, tell us, I wanted to know about sustainable development goals a bit in more detail. So how or which of the SDGs you are addressing, and how is WMO leaving that SDG framework? Do you use it, or like, you know, because UN has created that, but we are really curious to know how is it happening from inside.
Yeah. So first one could say that we are lagging behind in the implementation of the sustainable development goals. Mm-hmm. And there's a growing impact of negative impact coming from climate change. We have estimated that about 10 out of the 17 sustainable development goals, they are affected by climate change. It has an impact on water issues, it has impact on agriculture, it has impact on energy, it has impact on many sectors and human well-being worldwide, and we have to battle against the negative impact of climate change. That's for sure delaying implementation of sustainable development goals. At the moment, one of the concerns is that this war in Ukraine is having lots of attention, and that's partly happening at the expense of sustainable development goals, and many developed countries are financing now activities in Ukraine instead of financing activities in less developed countries, and that has been a slight has been causing some friction also in the UN family, that for example the African countries, they are not very happy with this attention that we are giving to Ukraine. Of course there needs to be attention to Ukraine, but uh, but if it's happening at the expense of their development challenges, that's a little bit controversial at the moment.
Yeah. Absolutely, I think the whole world is losing if any war happens on our planet, right? Nobody's gaining because the whole attention goes away from sustainable development goals, for example. The capital, attention, everything goes away instead of uniting us and putting it to resolve the issues and not creating even more issues that already out there.
Yeah, exactly.
What would be your plans for the following 5 years? Where do you see WMO and other systems that we discussed today?
So we have three major initiatives for the coming years. One is this early warning services for all. As I said, only half of the members of 193 members of WMO have proper early warning services. That's one of our main goals, and there we have to invest also in these basic observing systems. Then we have created a new initiative how to better monitor the behavior of main greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide. We have a ground-based network which WMO is running, and then we have satellite measurements from Japan, China, and India, and USA so far, and soon a couple of more European satellites. And then we have modeling means to simulate the behavior of those gases, how they are emitted and how they are converted and how they are taken by forests and farmlands and also ocean. And our aim is to create a real-time monitoring system of the budgets of those three gases, which would be a very powerful way to follow the implementation of Paris Agreement. And we have some unknowns in the greenhouse gas question. For example, we don't know too well how the forests are acting, and we don't know too well which are the sources of methane. We know that it's coming from agriculture, from rice paddies, and from cattle, but the exact things are not too well understood. And this is one of our initiatives to create a global real-time monitoring system for carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide. And then we have learned that there would be a need to create better climate models to describe, for example, what's going to happen to the water resources in the longer run. At the moment, the resolution of these climate models is about 30 kilometers, whereas the physical scale of clouds is something like one kilometer, and there are now there's now theoretical possibility to create bigger supercomputers that we could go to this higher resolution of climate modeling. And one of our new initiatives is to create a global center which would have such computer resources available, and that would help us to have a better description of what's going to happen to the rainfall amounts and water resources in the long run. So those three issues, early warning services, greenhouse gases, and climate modeling, are the main issues that WMO is promoting at the moment.
Okay, and what is the main challenge that WMO is facing or will face in the future, and how are you tackling it or planning to tackle it?
I think that what we have realized that is that the issues that we are dealing with, disasters, climate change, changes in precipitation patterns and water resources, they are very high on the global agenda, and the demand of our expertise has been rapidly growing, and we need also resources for those purposes, and we also have to find resources to assist our less developed country members in coping to cope better with climate adaptation and growing impacts of climate change.
Professor, tell us, knowing the inconvenient truth and all the facts, you know, how can you sleep good at night? What keeps you going, and what's your inner energy that you still deliver the reports, and how do you do that?
That's a good question. So I have been following this climate issue for the past 40 years. I studied meteorology in the early 80s, since then it has been important to communicate these facts to the decision makers and also for the private sector, big companies and so forth. I'm optimistic that we have started moving in the right direction thanks to the information that we have provided through the IPCC reports, to WMO reports, and perhaps also my personal small bit. I'm confident that the mankind understands the nature of this problem, and we have seen a growing amount of interest to solve this problem. So I'm happy to continue communicating this, and that's what my organization and IPCC is also doing. I'm confident that this makes sense, and we can avoid the biggest damage to the mankind and to our planet.
Mm-hmm. How can our audience support you in your mission?
So of course it's important that everybody does their bit. So we have to have decision made at the government level and in Europe, for example, at the European Union level and also at the single company level. But we as consumers, we have also role to play how we act in democratic countries while choosing our members of parliament and so forth. But also what kind of means of transportation we are using. For example, here in Geneva, I'm using electric bike most of the days while commuting 15 kilometers to my office. And also this overall consumption is an issue. Many of the goods that we are buying, they are produced with coal-fired energy, and this kind of consumption is also an issue. And then we can, in some parts of the world, we can also decide how we heat or cool our houses. For example, in my case, we have installed heat pump solutions to both our houses in Geneva region and also in Finland, and we can save lots of energy. And finally, this diet. So if we would eat a little bit less meat, we could reduce this deforestation and reduce some methane emissions as well.
Yeah, and can you please share any call to action message for our global audience?
What should they do?
So please listen to the facts of science and start acting. And also what we do has an impact. And I have been following the behavior of my own children, and I have been learning from them how to become more climate friendly. And this gives you also good sense. So I think it's also mentally nice to be part of the solution.
Okay.
Thank you so much. It's a very good message. And it was such a pleasure having you with us today. The time is just flying so quick. So we need to round up. And we would like to thank you with membership of Chamomile Impact Community and the Impact Leader Certificate, which you will receive. So just register on chamomile.ch and we will upgrade it all. Thank you for joining us today. It was a huge pleasure. I send you a lot of positive energy to continue what you are doing in this world.
Yeah, thank you very,
thanks
very much.
Thanks a lot. It was a great pleasure.
Yeah.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
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 So, dear viewers, with this, we finish episode 5 of season 5. And please remember to subscribe on our YouTube channels, youtube.com/SwissImpact, and then you will always know what's going on climate change or other news in the world and impact, and more importantly, how you can get engaged, how you can invest, and what can you do for our beautiful blue planet.
So looking forward to seeing you all next week, Friday, with two amazing guests, again coming from the same country as Professor Talas, that is Finland. And they are going to talk about how to combine climate data with financial data.
And we invite all impactful businesses to come to our TV show. You can always apply, check it out, and get in contact with us. As for now, you get more when you give back.
So always invest with impact. Hi, we hope you enjoyed this episode of TV show, Swiss Impact with Banerjees.
Make sure you check out the next one, and also find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Spotify, podcasts, and any of your favorite social media places.
And please subscribe to our channel so you know when we release new episodes.
And also leave us some feedback to help us grow this awesome impact community and join it.
We look forward to sharing the next episodes with you. And until then, you get more when you give back.
So always invest with impact.